and welcome back to the Marketing Cloudcast, where we bring in the world's best marketers, thought leaders, industry experts, and authors together to talk about marketing trends and tactics that help us all be better marketers. I'm Tina Razul, one of your co-hosts, hosting all the way from Sydney, Australia. We are in our second episode of our How to Speak ABM series. In our first episode, we covered the basics of account-based marketing, and we shared how it has become a very core part of how organizations are planning their go-to-market strategies. Because it's as important now more than ever that we're nurturing and growing all of our top customers, and we also have access to advanced technology to help us do ABM at scale. Now, in our second episode, we are going to build on those basics and talk about how to create the best ABM strategies. To help us unpack what those are, we have a special guest co-host today for you guys, as Megan is on a very well-deserved road trip adventure across the United States. We have one of our incredible producers, Connor Wigman. Connor, welcome back to the show. What can we look forward to in this second episode?
Tina, thank you so much. It's so great to be on the show again. You know I'm always ready to get in front of the mic. Now, this second episode is all about data. While we were prepping this series, I noticed something. Data is always one of the first things that we talk about, whether it was our Leading Through Change series or Moment Makers, and now with How to Speak ABM. And working on the data strategy team for retail and consumer goods, I can tell you that the marketing leaders that I've worked with are prioritizing data now more than ever to drive all of their strategies. And if you've been a listener of our series wrap-up episodes, you know that the data episodes are always my favorite. I'm so glad to be co-hosting the second episode of this ABM series with you.
Absolutely. So much to look forward to. So Connor, what can our listeners expect in this episode?
So Tina, in our first episode, we spoke with Mike Kostow, the general manager of Pardot at Salesforce, and Emma Chalwin, the SVP of Global Field Marketing at Salesforce. They laid out how we can get started with ABM, and they touched on how understanding details like opportunity size, geography, behavior, and rate of engagement is what influences the prioritization of what accounts to target. So we're going to dig into that further and talk about the data that matters to make ABM successful. And for the topic, we wanted to bring in the experts from Demandbase. We brought in Chris Golick, the founder of Demandbase, and John Miller, their chief product officer. We also brought back Karen Holmgren, who you might remember from our Moment Maker series. She is the Senior Manager of Global Marketing Operations at Pitney Bowes, and she'll be sharing her insights as well.
Sounds like some incredible luminaries that will be joining us in this episode. So really looking forward to digging into the data with this one. So who do we have first up?
Yeah, so first up, we have Chris. He started Demandbase back in 2007 to really fill that unmet need in B2B, which was helping companies focus their marketing dollars on the accounts that matter most. And fun fact about John, who is joining him, he was the former co-founder and original chief marketing officer at Marketo. Now, before she left on her road trip adventure, Megan was able to meet with all three of our guests to dig into the importance of data in ABM and to uncover the best sources of data to drive your relationships with the accounts that matter. So to start, here is Megan's interview with Chris and John.
So, Chris, what data is important for ABM? Why is it important? And why do marketers need to worry about it?
Historically, ABM was really built upon data from the very beginning. In fact, the first solutions were all proprietary database, and it was designed around account identity. How can I do a better job digitally understanding the companies that I want to sell to, what they're doing, what they're interested in, both on my website and off? And, you know, fast forward to today, data becomes so significant and important to the whole platform. And it's really comprised of a variety of different types of data sets, everything from intent data, third-party data, first-party. And as you look at Demandbase in our area of focus around data and Engageo, it's really those complementary data sets that really came together to give us the most comprehensive data platform behind our ABM.
Yeah. And John, I would love kind of, you know, you've been in this industry for quite a while. If you could add any more context to just what is the first and third party data that we need to power that ABM strategy?
The marketing automation platforms, including Pardot, a huge part of the value that they bring is a single view of the person, the single view of the lead, and bringing all that information together. And that was essentially, that was a big innovation that enabled you to do things like the nurturing and lead scoring, campaign management, and a bunch of the other key things that marketing automation has traditionally brought to the table. I think ABM needs a single view of the account. And you know, that means taking all the information you have that sits in your enterprise about that account and bringing it together into a consolidated view. So that involves pulling data from Salesforce CRM. It also means pulling data from your marketing automation system and doing lead to account matching. Another data source that actually I think is hugely valuable, that's first party data, is your the stuff that's hidden in your email and calendar system. I mean, just think about, you want a single view of your relationship with an account. There's so much amazing data locked in those emails that your salespeople are sending back and forth with customers. So you have all these different siloed sources of information about the account. And if they're disconnected, what ends up happening is marketing and sales can't be working on the same page, right? Because they're not looking at the same information. You know, marketing might say, hey, you have three people who downloaded this ebook from this account. Sales is like, but I can't see that because I'm looking at the account object inside Salesforce. And then you layer in all this amazing predictive third-party data, like probably the one that gets the most buzz these days is intent data. So intent data looks at what content companies are reading out on the open web. You know, and when you start seeing a particular company maybe reading a whole bunch of new articles about cybersecurity, more than they were reading last week, you can start to maybe use the machine learning to figure out, huh, that company might be entering a purchase cycle for cybersecurity, which is pretty cool information to know if you happen to sell cybersecurity.
Yeah.
So you get to pull this first party and third party data together to really form the comprehensive view of the account.
I learned a lot. So just want to recap here. You know, you talked about consolidating what you have. So to your point, like we've talked about a lot of different pieces of data that you could pull in. Obviously, not every single person or not every single company has access to this data, whether it's they're like a longtime traditional company, hasn't really had a digital transformation yet or what have you. Is there a particular piece of data that's like crucial? Like you need to have this, or is it more of let's take what you have, let's consolidate it in order to better use it for this ABM account?
More data is always better because it's yeah, more signal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as John's earlier point, it's really the combination of all this third-party data and your first-party data, but it's really also the technology layer that sits on top to interpret mm-hmm. it and make it relevant for your business.
If I had to pick one data source, though, you know, I probably would hang my hat on intent. Because the reason why intent data is so amazing is it's so great when leads come to you, right? And you can kind of go sell them.
Yeah. When we have this data, when we've consolidated and then grow from there as you start to build your account-based marketing powerhouse, right? But with that becomes kind of like a new muscle, right? And so when you think about the orchestration behind it, it's a lot of marketing with sales. Like you're not used to working with an individual versus an account. So is there any kind of mindset that needs to change there?
Because I think it's a really good analogy here for how marketing sales need to work,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is, I'd say a lot of marketing sales teams are used to working in what I'll call a baton handoff model.
I like that.
You know, marketing generates a lead, hands it to a sales development rep or business development rep who then qualifies it and then hands it to sales, who then closes it and then hands it to customer success. That model works in kind of maybe the traditional inbound world. But in this account-based world today, I think a much better analogy is a soccer team, where you're going to have people in different positions. You have fullbacks and forwards and that kind of thing. But they work as a single team and they pass the ball back and forth. You know, and it's that much more orchestrated maneuver you were talking about. Sometimes sales is the first contact and marketing is involved even during the open opportunity. It raises the bar on the need for that orchestration, which raises the bar on the need for everybody to be sharing information, which goes back to the single view of the account we talked about.
I would add in there, you know, so I worked at GE prior to getting in software. This was back in the early 90s. And we had a team of people at GE that just focused on Apple Computer. And so everything we were doing was account-based, both selling and marketing. There just wasn't technology around it. And so, you know, the company was really founded to really align with sales teams. Sales teams are account-based. CRM systems are account-based. But the world of marketing and advertising has not been account-based. So it's really just aligning sales and marketing and creating, you know, a digital supply chain as John described.
Yeah, at the end of the month, no salesperson ever celebrates how many leads they closed.
How many deals they've won, right?
Exactly.
And maybe we go back to the data piece of it. I know you mentioned your number one, where you hang your hat, would be the more of the intent data. Chris, I'd love your perspective on that. Is there like a piece of data that you think is most helpful? And that was a good point, John, of like, how are we weaving this in to our strategy?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I'll take you back to 2008.
Oh, let's go. Let's go on a road trip.
Once we built some technology to identify web traffic by accounts, when we built a lot of proprietary data to do that at scale, one of the things we uncovered and showed to customers, which was very frustrating to them, frankly, was that most of their web traffic, you know, from Google or paid search or email, was coming from accounts that they'll never sell to. And in fact, it wasn't uncommon to see 90, 95% of a customer's web traffic from companies that will never buy anything. And so the first problem customers needed to solve was, am I bringing the right companies, the right accounts to my website to begin with? Because everything doesn't matter if you're not even engaging the right companies to begin with. And so that data insight of who's engaging with me digitally is so, so important, because that happens long before somebody raises a hand or fills out a form. And when you know that, you can adjust very quickly.
That's a good point. So like what you were talking about was more of like maybe being proactive, but Chris, you brought up a good point of it's also trying to save budget, probably wasted spend on accounts that just aren't relevant either. So I think it's a twofold there as well.
Yeah. And to, you know, and I would just add in a comment that John made. You know, there are companies that only want to sell to the Fortune 500, but guess what? There's 50 that they should spend all their time on, because they're already in market doing research, and it's a lot more effective, efficient use of marketing dollars and sales time.
They're showing intent. I'm learning the lingo, guys. I'm learning it.
Maybe we can expand on this a little bit. I mean, just because, you know, there's really four factors that, you know, we sort of would recommend people take a look at.
Okay, let's do it.
And so we talked about intent, the first one, but I think another one would be just what I'd call fit or qualification.
Okay.
Which is effectively just, hey, how good a fit is this account for your ideal customer profile? Right? Because again, an account could be showing amazing purchase intent, but they're too small for you to sell to, right? So that still wouldn't be an interesting account.
Okay.
They might be in the wrong industry, you name it. So you have fit, you have intent, then you have relationship. Obviously, some accounts are already customers of yours, right? You're going to think about that differently than a totally cold account. You know, even accounts that aren't customers, maybe you have a relationship. Maybe you have there's a person over there who was a customer of yours at a prior role. So the more you can understand the context of your existing relationship, the better shape you're going to be. And then lastly, I think you have the current engagement with the account. We like to have a saying, you know, before an account spends money with you, they're going to spend time with you. And so just tracking, is this account engaging with me? Are people from that company visiting my website? Are they attending my webinars? Are they downloading my content? You know, and then kind of bringing that all together. Those four signals ultimately are what you want to look at for identifying and prioritizing your accounts. Conveniently enough, they also make a nice acronym. Fit, intent, relationship, and engagement. It's on fire.
Right. And you know, Megan, one thing that John just brought up, ABM is used broadly for existing customers. I know in the world of marketing and leads, we're a lot of times talking about new business, but a lot of our customers are big enterprises and 95% of their revenue comes from existing customers. And so there's a lot of practices around applying ABM to companies coming up for renewal or upselling, cross-selling. So it's not always about leads and new business. It's about serving your existing customers better, a better digital experience.
So a lot of decisions have to be made, it sounds like. So the importance of having your marketing teams be really close with your sales team sounds pretty crucial. I'd love to get nerdy a little bit. And if there's any kind of gotchas or lessons learned along the way of struggling maybe through any of these situations or accessing this type of data, or it sounds like there's a lot of work to go into creating the ideal top 10 accounts, but maybe it's easier said than done. Any lessons along the way?
I'd say one gotcha I've seen is that people do wait too long because they try to sort of, you know, make everything perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the single biggest gotcha I've seen companies run into is, and Chris alluded to this, they don't change the way they're measuring marketing success when they embark on an ABM journey. Because historically, if you're measuring marketing success based upon number of downloads, number of people who attended your webinar, or even number of leads, you know, you're sort of counting the wrong thing. You know, or as David Ogilvy used to say, it's not about counting the people you reach, it's about reaching the people who count. And so what you really want to be doing is, you know, saying for the counts that matter, am I really, you know, deepening my relationship and my engagement with those accounts over time? It becomes something that's much more about measuring quality, not just quantity. And as a marketer, if you haven't set the expectation with the rest of the organization that those lead-based metrics might go down in an ABM effort, you could get into trouble. Right. Mm-hmm. So really, that's your biggest gotcha, is get the measurement aligned up front. We're big advocates of a new metric called the marketing qualified account, or the MQA. You know, this is sort of a play. I mean, marketers usually talk about MQLs, or marketing qualified leads. You know, the MQA is a great way to sort of keep some of that same, you know, mechanisms that people have, but bring it forward into the ABM view of the world.
Chris, from seeing it from the 2008 Chris to 2020 Chris, any gotchas?
Yeah, you know, not involving sales up front is super important. And that's more of a business process of kicking off a program versus technology. But, you know, believe me, when you get the sales leaders in a room and you tell them you want to focus marketing dollars on the accounts their sales team should be selling to, they're excited about it. They often question and go, well, what were you guys doing before? So, and it's great collaboration between sales and marketing when you kick off a program. But that is really the number one to program success, is making sure sales is engaged early.
It was great to hear from Chris and John's insight on data. A highlight that stood out to me were the four factors that are essential to identifying and prioritizing the right accounts to build out an ABM plan. Now, John referred to this as FIRE, which stands for, are the accounts the right fit for the organization? Are they showing amazing purchase intent? And the more we start to understand the context of the existing relationships we have with those accounts, the better in shape we are going to be. And lastly, as we think about how we are engaging with those accounts, it allows us to be more fine-tuned in how we are targeting and creating our ABM plan. Now, as a recap, FIRE stands for, is it the right fit? Do we have the right intent? What does the relationship we have with the account look like? And how are we engaging with them? Is it on fire? Next is our interview with Karen Holmgren. She's the Senior Manager of Global Marketing Operations at Pitney Bowes. She'll be sharing how data is essential to driving your relationships with the accounts that matter, and also thinking about unique ways outside of digital and how we can continuously engage different accounts and build meaningful relationships with our customers. Here's Megan's interview with Karen.
You had mentioned that your team uses ABM and your counterparts in demand gen as well. So could you kind of share what ABM looks like at Pitney Bowes?
ABM, account-based marketing, is varied throughout Pitney Bowes. So one of the things that is always important, no matter what tactic you choose, because it is varied depending on your goals, is to have the right data in place. It's not enough at Pitney Bowes to have a sales rep say, I need this account in ABM. They have to have that data saying, I've made an effort already, and I need more help from marketing and this account could be worth this dollar amount in terms of revenue. And this account is influential in these areas and this is why we need to go after it. They can't just say, oh yeah, send it to these 40 accounts, right? It's very expensive often to do ABM because it is so personal and so highly customized to that account. That is one of the beauties of it. I'm not sure that anyone does what we used to call spray and pray campaign, but this is the ultimate highly targeted type of campaign. And some of that makes it more expensive, but it could be worth it depending on the account and the score the account has from the rep. So that's really important to start with. Are these the right accounts and why are they the right accounts? And that's all data driven. And then when we talk about the goals or the success of the campaign, again, the data really drives the success. Is it the goal to capture more names and contacts in an enterprise account to influence that key decision maker? In an enterprise account, there may be multiple decision makers that have to agree. It's not enough to just contact one person. You have to contact a whole team of people. If there are multiple decision makers in different hierarchies, do you need the boss or is that boss highly influenced by the people who will be using the tool? That sort of thing. And then what are the personas of those people and what is the right message for them? It's going to be different depending on the persona and what's important to them. How do you know that? Is it looking at market research? Is it looking at news reports about their stock price and what, where the company's going, where they're growing and their plans like that? It's important to have all those sorts of facts and data before you move ahead with some of the messaging. Maybe you do need to look at their LinkedIn profile and see what they've been working on. Maybe you do need to read through some articles about what they're doing, you know, so you want to be specific and you want to be correct and you want to cast a wide net in that fashion. Whatever data source is going to get you that information and that knowledge is what you need.
That's brought up a good point. I mean, it sounds like you're getting in the groove of how to use account-based marketing. So could you share any kind of specifics around a particular campaign or particular account that you worked with that had some good results and you feel proud of it?
Yeah, we had a lot of fun late last year with an ABM campaign that targeted sportswear, outdoorsy type of retail accounts where the direct mail hit the home run, which is kind of surprising. Right? We always think digital, but sometimes it's the old-fashioned stuff that really makes a difference. In this particular campaign, there were 5 accounts chosen by the sales team. The reps were making calls, sending emails, but they really needed some extra special support from marketing for our e-commerce returns business in particular. So the goal of the campaign was to showcase to those accounts how easy it is for the consumer to use our return system versus using their current system. And we wanted to put the leaders at those companies in the shoes of their customers, which sounds easy, right? And it sounds like a good idea, but it's oftentimes within companies, they are talking to themselves internally and not always considering the customer journey. It's kind of surprising, but I think that is true. So the first thing we did was we emailed a pre-delivery notice to create awareness. And that has a dual purpose. We sent them a notice saying, hey, you're going to have a surprise package on the way. Isn't that cool? And what we were able to do with that is if I was talking about churn rate before, if the email bounced, we know that that person's no longer at that account. So we're not going to send them a box of stuff. So that's a kind of a sneaky data hygiene check to confirm the list has the right account contacts.
Oh,
right? Little sneaky.
I like that.
That's the kind of stuff you've got to do to make sure you've got the list correct for an ABM campaign.
It's all back to the data. I'm telling you, it's all about the data. Yeah. But that's an interesting way that you did it. And it's super fun. So I love it. You really hit a home run. I love it. Follow-up question on that. What does the relationship look like between your sales and your marketing?
Our success is their success. So this particular campaign had a 20% response rate for direct mail, which is incredible.
Wow.
And it created a $20 million pipeline. So if we hadn't sent that direct mail, because sales asked us for extra support, they wouldn't have made that pipeline or closed those deals, right? So it really is hand in hand. We're working together to meet the same types of revenue goals for the company.
So there you have it, folks. Episode 2 of How to Speak ABM. And knowing what data and information you have about your accounts is really what sets the strategy and approach to targeting. Connor, what did you think?
It was so great to hear from our demand-based guests and then hear Karen's experience with ABM. Chris and John talked about the power of intent data in ABM. And as the tools used to collect intent data improve, I can see this as a key source that companies use in sales, marketing, and service. And I think we'll be hearing about intent data again sometime really soon. And it was interesting to hear Karen's experience using data to power a non-digital platform like direct mail. But I think we need to add another ingredient to the secret sauce and add data teams as another key aspect of driving successful ABM plans.
Ooh, another ingredient. I love that.
Keeps adding on.
Keeps adding it on. It's like a really good recipe that you want to keep getting better and better. Well, this wraps up our second episode. Connor, thank you so much for joining and co-hosting with us today.
Oh, so much fun. Like it always is so much fun. And thank you so much for inviting me on.
Now, everyone, stay tuned and be sure to subscribe as we continue to unpack how to speak ABM. In our next episode, we will discuss account anthropology. Now, what that is we'll be covering what the best targeted accounts actually look like. So make sure that you join us next week for our next episode. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And especially thank you to Think Ahead Studios for editing this episode, Audible.com for the music, and, of course, the wonderful Press Maxon for the jingle. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.